Hi, I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris, and this is the EdShift Podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the EdShift Podcast. Chris and I are really thrilled to be joined by Ed Fairfield today. Much like Chris and I can both relate to, Ed has a varied background and brings a lot of different experiences to the various roles that he plays. As a starting point, Ed is vice chair of NACE, a UK-based charity organization really focused around helping ensure schools get the most out of their ed tech. He is also the director of elementary technology based out of Leeds, right, Ed?
Yes.
Yep. Yes. He also brings background as a school governor and has lots of experience in terms of supporting and helping schools to get the most out of their technology. Ed, welcome to the EdShift Podcast.
Thank you. That's a wonderful introduction. Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
So let's start off and talk a little bit about NACE, because some of our audience might not know what's that all about. What are you guys doing? And I believe you're celebrating a big milestone this month as well for the organization.
We are. NACE is 40 this month. So I'm a teeny bit older than NACE, actually, now I think about it.
But I was going to say, which is not old, for the record, but...
Yes, in the prime of its life, you could say, is NACE. So NACE, the EdTech Association, it's a registered charity, and it's 40 years old. And its early days were around computing for education. And it actually stands for the National Association of Advancing Computing in Education. So that acronym is long gone for obvious reasons. And now it's a national independent charity. Now we're all about supporting schools and multi-academy trusts and everybody in education to understand where they are with technology and how to make best use of it. So the way NACE divides technology, lots of people talk about EdTech with regard to teaching and learning, but what NACE does, we understand that technology is everywhere. It's in every corner of our schools. It's used for school management. It's used for assessment. It's used for digital safeguarding, for teaching and learning, for CPD. And we segment technology into those different areas, and we support schools with those areas accordingly. So it's exciting, it's different, and it gives me really good insight into how every organization approaches technology in a completely unique way. Some better than others, but all fabulous in their own way and all completely unique. And that's really interesting. And I bring that back and I share that with other schools and trusts that I talk to on a daily basis. I love it. It's really interesting.
So that feels like really interesting work, because this EdTech landscape is so dynamic, right? Everything is changing. Things are shifting. Schools are trying to figure out what the best approach is and how they can be successful. And you've obviously seen a lot of this and you've advised on a lot of this. So if you're thinking about putting new EdTech into a school, what are the hallmarks of a really good implementation? Like, what are the things that, if we keep top of mind, will help us navigate this? Because I think in a world of constricting budgets and increasing diversity in technology and increasing needs of students, like, that, it can feel a little daunting. So I'd love to, from all the things you've seen, I'd love to hear what you've gleaned from that and what could maybe help our listeners as they're thinking about adding new things to their ed tech landscape.
Yeah. That's a great question, a question that we often get asked. You talk about landscape, and landscape is about being somewhere, being in a place. And what most schools don't take the time to understand is where they are now. What does their current landscape look like? And that will be my first advice. So understand where you are now with your technology. So that covers your hardware, your software, your teacher experience, your pupil experience, how well used is it? Is it useful? How expensive is it? What are your current cost base? where am I now with my technology? Before I start considering about what I want or what I need, where am I now? So with our elementary technology hat on, that's my day job, as that's what pays the mortgage, as it were. We have our classroom health check. So a school or a trust will come to us and they'll want to buy something. And we'll say, right, OK, we'd love to help you with that. Let's talk about where you are now and how what you want to buy is going to work in your current landscape. And that's always my first bit of advice. Work out where you are now before you move forward. It's a bit like a sat nav, a bit like a journey or a roadmap. You need to know where you are now, where you want to go, and then plan your kind of route. And that route plan is the buying of the stuff. So don't buy anything yet. Don't make any decisions. Get that, work out where you are in that landscape first. That's first stop, which from a supplier point of view is often quite surprising to a school or a trust, because they're like, so you actually are telling me to slow down and not buy anything from you yet. Is that actually what you're telling me? And well, yes, because you don't know where you are now, and you have an existing estate of technology. There's no doubt that you can do better and work harder in making more of what you've already got, first of all, and then making sure that what you buy kind of works and integrates properly. And ultimately, when we explain that and support that journey, we're building trust as a trusted advisor. So hopefully that will cement a longer term relationship with that school. And that's kind of what's in it for us.
In that, there's an interesting piece of change management in there too. Like, as you were talking about, like, identifying what you have and picking the next good thing to go forward. I feel like sometimes it's hard to let go of what we've used in the past. And I think that for teachers in particular, right, because you become very personally connected to the tools that help you connect with your students and help them achieve the learning goals you have for them. So is there advice you have on change management for kind of helping to maybe take away the things that are no longer serving us and bring something new in, like that? Just thinking about it, it feels hard to me. I don't know if it feels hard to you, Katie, but every time I learn something new, I'm like, oh gosh, I am too old for this.
Yes, again, that's a really good question. And it's about the comfort zone, isn't it? And it's about, I'm happy doing what I'm doing. I know it isn't perfect, but I have a routine. I have a comfort zone. I know what will happen when I press a button. I'm not kind of thinking on the hop in the classroom, and if something doesn't work, then I'll have behavior management problems. I'm fine as I am, thank you very much. I don't need this new tech. I don't want to spend time on training. Just leave me alone. I'm busy. I've got too much to do already. And that's absolutely a mindset that, understandably, that lots of teachers and schools have. And I think there were a few ways I'd approach that from a decision maker point of view. So if there is a structural need to upgrade some estate in a school or a trust, that change management is really important. And that consultation with the teachers and the users is really important. Understanding where they are now, what they're comfortable with, why they like what they're already doing. Before you make any decisions, and then understanding what the opportunities are and introducing those opportunities to the teachers. Well, wouldn't it be great if instead of pupils sitting down looking in their iPads and doing an exercise, wouldn't it be great if the answers they were giving, if you could see them on your laptop live? That would be fabulous, wouldn't it? That would be something you'd find really useful, wouldn't it? Because that would mean that you are reducing your workload, you're reducing time printing and cost printing. Is that something you'd enjoy? Here, let me show you how that could work. And involving them in that journey. And they're like, okay, that works for me. That's one area I'd look at, about the communication and the kind of the warm-up period, rather than imposing change on people, which happens far too often from trust level, that disconnect between chooser and user I talk about. So they've got this p- people choose it and the users use it, but there's no communication in between. The other area is, I think decisions are often made based on where, based on the past and the legacy and the and where we are now and where we were 5 years ago. So if a teacher's in a comfort zone, they've probably been in that comfort zone for 5 years. So when you're making a procurement choice, that needs to be future-proof. And that needs to last for 5 years. So in 5 years, you're making, you've got something that was fit for something 10 years ago, if you do the maths. So you're making choices based on where you were 5 years ago, rather than where you want to be in 5 years' time. So you're kind of tying yourself to the past, rather than kind of striding forward to the future. And if you look at that kind of timeline, from a visual point of view, I put that in front of decision makers before. So where are you now? What are you looking at when you're making your choices? And often they're like, okay, you're right. I'm here for another 5 years. I want this to be working and fit for purpose in 5 years' time. So let's change the way we approach it.
I love what you mentioned in there about talking to, you know, the teachers and the users as well. We hear so often that both teachers and students are left out of the decision making, right? And ultimately, they're the ones using it and making sure to ask the questions. Because also, you know, I personally have talked to plenty of schools that when they said, oh, yeah, you know, we've literally never talked to students about how we do this. And then they do, and they're surprised by the responses, because it's not sort of what they thought it would be. I'm starting to think a bit about new tools. You know, you're talking about future proofing, and we're in this era where, you know, AI is, you know, coming quickly for many different places. It's obviously a big deal in education, but we're also seeing you know, schools, districts, trusts that are trying to make policy around using AI, but they don't maybe even have a foundational digital strategy set up yet. So what kind of conversations are you having about AI, and how are you thinking that, particularly sort of with your, you know, kind of leadership and governor hat on?
Yeah, I think it's a brave new world, isn't it? And ironically, I heard of a school, and I don't know if it's true, it might have been like an ironic joke, that they wrote their digital strategy in ChatGPT. And I thought, wow, that's a whole new level of kind of irony of improvement there.
Isn't it?
But they, you know what, I'm sure ChatGPT, pending correct prompting and all of that, giving it the context, I'm sure it did a decent job of it, to be fair. But AI is people, I think you can get the impression it's everywhere and everyone's talking about it, but I think it depends what bubble you're in. If you're in the LinkedIn Twitter bubble and the algorithms are firing AI at you, then you think, wow, AI is everywhere. But it's easy to forget that lots of people are in their own bubbles of local authority, small primary schools, for example. And they're not browsing, they're not doom scrolling Twitter or X, as nobody calls it, or LinkedIn. And it's not something that's on their radar at all. And they probably heard about it, and they probably understand what it could do at a top level. And they might have had a try at it, but they're not immersed in it and they're not using it to reduce workload on a day-to-day basis. For lots of reasons, they kind of don't know what they don't know. They haven't made time to explore it. They haven't got like a mentor or a kind of a learning network. And it just kind of happens in the background. And I think there's a silent majority of teachers and schools who are in that category. And I think there's a gap in the system. And I think suppliers can do better at escaping the bubble that they're in, talking to people who already get it, and trying to reach out to other people who don't get it yet. And that's something that we're trying to do at NACE. We're trying to expand and broaden the message, rather than going to an EdTech show, because everyone's already interested in EdTech and gets it, trying to find other ways in, such as teach meets and head teacher cluster meetings, where they talk generically about safeguarding and behavior management and things like that that happen every day already, and introducing AI to them. I think that that's a really important thing that we need to try and address, because we're amplifying this digital divide where you've got a bunch of people flying with AI, you know, automated marking and all of the plethora of AI tools, and then the rest of them, the majority, I think, are being left behind. So, lots we can do there as suppliers, I think.
I think that's great, because it's really this, I think you're right. There's so much in certain spaces in the media and social media about AI, both very positive, raving about all of the benefits it brings, and also like, it will be the end of us. And I think if you're not in that space, like you mentioned, a lot of teachers are, you still hear, you know, whispers of it, and it seems overwhelming, and it almost is like, okay, I can't, I don't have the bandwidth to process that. And so it becomes even more frightening, I think. And so this really making sure that there are efforts in place to educate everyone, to educate our teachers so they feel more comfortable talking about it. Because I think for our kids, once they leave school and go out there, it's not going away, and it is working its way into workplaces. Yeah. And to your comment too about, you know, the school that may have written their policy in ChatGPT, it is all about the quality of the prompts that you put in. And that's not something that a large number of us have ever had any schooling in. And that is something probably needs to be integrated into the daily curriculum for our kids now. Yes. Because it could definitely build that divide and continue to build that divide if we're not taking action and taking effort to break that down and make people feel comfortable. Are there other similar trends that you notice that maybe are building some of that divide from our teachers who are ready to like jump off the bleeding edge into new technology and then the rest of the world?
I think people devices is the other one. Again, a lot of so in the UK, we're transitioning between local authority led schools into multi-academy trusts. So multi-academy trusts are becoming larger and stronger and better equipped. Local authority schools are kind of, there's a tendency for them to not have that safety net of a well-managed, knowledgeable trust there as a safety net of expertise. So the local authority primary schools particularly, they often don't have anywhere to turn for advice, and they kind of have to be experts in everything, because whereas a multi-academy trust will have a CPD lead, they'll have a cybersecurity lead, they'll have an expert in GDPR, they'll have a head of digital learning that is an expert on AI, they'll have a CFO who understands how to balance the books and get economies of scale. Primary schools and local authority schools kind of don't have that. I think there's a knock-on effect of AI and also pupil devices such as iPads and Chromebooks and tech in general, because they know it exists, and they've probably dipped the toe in the water. They might have splashed out on some pupil devices or VR technology or 3D printer. But there isn't much best practice. There isn't enough best practice there as a trend. So going back to your original question, I think pupil devices are the big, the other digital divide which is happening, because the larger schools who have the knowledge and the budgets and the buying power, they can start moving into one-to-one devices. The others, they can't afford it, perhaps, or they don't know what to do. Where do I buy it from? How do I quote it? How do I set it up? And then how do I use it? So the ripple effect of that is, for example, Lumio. The magic of Lumio is in the pupil devices, and they're missing out. So there's kind of a bit of a lottery, a bit of a postcode lottery, a classroom lottery. So if I'm a young person, it depends what classroom I'm in. I've either got it all, and I've got people who know what they're doing, and I've got people who can empower me to learn at my own pace, or I haven't, in which case it's pencil and paper time. All of that, I think, because it's so fast moving, I think it's kind of incumbent on the suppliers to fill that gap, because there isn't anyone else to do it, unfortunately. No one's stepping up. You know what? Tell a lie. There are some multi-academy trusts who are, and they're spreading their knowledge outside of their trust. So I'll backtrack a little bit there. There are some organisations that are really proud of what they do and they work hard to share their knowledge. But we could do with a few more of them. And I think the likes of NACE and SMART and Elementary Technology and loads of others, we could work a little bit harder to help them, I think.
Providing that support network so they can grow.
Yeah.
So I read an article, I feel like right around the time of BET, that the UK is striving to be one of the most accessible countries in the world. And this is kind of outside the scope of education, but just really kind of making sure when we look at digital content and the way the world has changed, that everyone can access that in a meaningful way. How do you see that in your world? Are you seeing schools starting to look at tools and ed tech differently with more of this lens of what does it mean to have truly accessible technology that everyone can access?
Yes, they are. There's definitely a will. There are lots of buzzwords around inclusion and equity and giving everybody equal access to learning, regardless of their ability or aptitude to writing, for example. And there's a lot that's very current. And lots of people are talking about it. Lots of the multi-academy trusts have got people actively exploring use of technology for accessibility, and lots haven't yet. But there's an increasing, again, suppliers, I think, are doing well stepping in. So there's some really good suppliers who have the greater good in mind, and often they've got teaching education backgrounds. And they're stepping up with really exciting innovations for SEND pupils and for accessibility. It's a really exciting area. And I think as well, the government in the UK, Department for Education, they kind of talk about it now and again, which is good. So they kind of know about it, which is the first step to actually doing something about it. There's talk of specific funding streams for SEND provision and special schools, and technology has an enormous role to play. So again, the Smart Tool Explorer and Lumio, various Lumio plugins that there are, as well as loads and loads of other platforms. What I'd refer back to is, again, the need for somebody at the school or the trust to kind of fight through that sales pattern and marketing messaging, understand where they are now, what they need, what they want to achieve, and then plan which and understand which tools are best for them. And that's a big job, because if you go to BET, everybody will try and sell their kit to you. And it's a real challenge, I think, for a school decision maker to understand what works and what doesn't. So, exciting innovation everywhere, but the same challenges of understanding what works and what doesn't, and evidence of impacts and all of that, they kind of weave throughout, don't they? And then this SEND leads in a school talking to their IT teams, who are usually the decision makers, and IT are like, whoa, what's all this about? We don't get it. It looks complicated. It's expensive. Sorry. No, goodbye. and that's another disconnect, another challenge for an organization. But massive role for it. I'd love to see more of that, I think, in the sector.
I mean, for us, it's definitely an area that we're very interested in, and that we really want to make sure we continue to evolve and support. Because if you think about it, and this is one of the many things that the pandemic put a bright spotlight on, is that when we initially globally thought about accessibility, we really were thinking about built spaces and physical spaces, and then the world changed. And so increasingly more of the information, the services, the things that people want to access in their day-to-day life are now found on a digital platform. And so rethinking what it means to navigate in a digital space instead of a physical space for teachers, for parents, for students, like that, it changes every day. Like every time we introduce a new ed tech tool, it's, you know, how do we make sure that in this now digital virtual space, anybody can still have meaningful interaction with it. So yeah. So as a company, we definitely are spending a lot of time evaluating how we are doing things and how we evolve those processes. And then personally, me, Chris, the individual, I'm fascinated by it and the potential and the way that we could maybe provide more individualized, personalized education to more students around the world by harnessing the tech that we have and looking at how we provide the right tools to the right students. And then that goes back to, you know, the roadmap that you started us out with, like, where am I starting? What am I going? What are the mile markers or things I need to hit along the way to make this a meaningful journey? And planning that all out so that when we get to the end of the journey, which is ultimately graduating a learner from our institution of education and sending them out equipped to deal with the world, that from when they started their education to when they finished it has probably changed drastically, which wasn't always the case for education. And so it's like an interesting shift in how do we maintain some of the rich history and traditions that education is connected to, and how do we evolve them to align with the world that we're in now and make it meaningful for kids. And I feel like it changes every day, right? Like so much is happening. So it's definitely an interesting space, and interesting to see how there's so many similarities around the globe and how we are approaching it. And then how there's some just unique pockets of innovation that happen in different areas and how that could expand.
Yes.
I was thinking about like this idea of you know, yes, the world is changing from a tech perspective, and also where we live and the way people move between places is going to become continually different, right? Like so many more people today live in a country that they weren't born in than ever before. That I think brings a whole different level of accessibility and being able to access what's right for you, what you need, and how do you bring your credentials with you, right? Like, you know, I might have been a straight A student in elementary school in my home country, but then, you know, by choice or by necessity, I've had to move, or I've been forced into a different place, and I don't have any of that. I can't reach my school. They're not there anymore. You know, how do we make sure that there's access in that way and that sense on a global scale as well?
Yeah, the globetrotters and the language is really exciting. And this is probably in the last year where you have the live translation. So I can talk to my device in my language, and live it'll type or perhaps even talk to my friend or my teacher in their language. So you're literally understanding each other in the moment whilst talking different languages and not talking the other. That's really exciting. I think that's really super new. I only saw it a couple of months ago for the first time, and I kind of knew it could happen. But that's now in Microsoft. You could do that in Microsoft Word, in PowerPoint and Copilot. And it's like, whoa, anybody can talk to anyone in the world now and understand what the other person is saying. And that's really cool. And that's tech doing a beautiful thing, isn't it? Bringing people together that talk different languages.
It's leveling the playing field. And that's what's interesting, right? Because we talked just a few minutes ago about some of the digital divides that tech can build up. And also at the same time, it can connect us and remove some of those barriers. So it's just a really fascinating period of time that we're living in with all of the things that we as humans have brought to the world and how they can connect us.
Fascinating and a bit scary, do you think?
Terrifying, right? If you think too hard about it.
I'm going to go 70-30 fascinating, scary, to be honest. But I think, you know what, hidden within the scary, half of that is still fascinating. It's kind of fear of the unknown, isn't it? And fear of and caution about where things are going. And I think if you don't know where we're going, then the fear inflates, doesn't it? And that's going back to the teacher who has a new bit of hardware put in their classroom at the beginning of September, and they don't know what it is, and they didn't expect it. They don't know what to do with it. They barely know how to switch it on. And the fear factor is on heat, isn't it? My guards are up. Little do they know that what is in front of them is potentially going to change the way they teach and the way their pupils learn for the better. Only if there's somebody there to tell them how, though. Only if,
right, that's the support piece.
Only if the school knows that it can do that in the first place, if the supplier has told them. Yeah. If the supplier knows it can do that, and there's like a chain of knowledge sharing, isn't there, which breaks down far too often, I think.
Yeah, it really does. I feel like we could dive into that topic all day, but
I know. I'm avoiding asking another question that will take us down another road that will take us half an hour to get to the end, but this has been a great conversation.
Ed, we do have one final question that we like to ask all of our guests before we wrap
up.
We'd love to know what the best part of your day's been so far today.
Oh, is this apart from talking to you two?
Yeah, everybody. You're not allowed to say this.
Right, okay. it'll be a product planning meeting we had earlier with Elementary Technology. And the fact that what the product is, it doesn't matter for now, but it was about the bringing together of lots of different people in the company. So we had an installation team, we had the marketing team, we had me, we had a couple of people from sales, we had the operations manager, and everybody had something unique to contribute to that meeting that very few other people had thought of. And there were repeated moments of magic, like, whoa, I didn't know anything about that. And we were recording it in a live online document, because some people were dialing in and some people were in the room. So what the product is doesn't matter. It was an exciting one, but it was a bringing people together with different experience, different expertise in the moment. And we all said, wow, that was a great meeting. We need to do that more often. And that's my best part of the day, along with my colleague saying, oh, can I make you a cup of tea? And that was an unexpected kindness. That was another highlight of my morning.
That's great. Because the bigger things, and then some days it's the cup of tea from the colleague.
The cup of tea from the colleague, mm-hmm. The unexpected kindness. I think that's really important, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. Well, Ed, thank you so much for being here. And thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in to this episode of the EdShift podcast. Make sure you're subscribed, hit that button, leave us a review if you enjoyed the conversation today. And we'll see you next time. Have a great day.